For Politico, I'm Ryan Heath, and this is Global Insider. We're still in New York City, and I'm up on a rooftop with people who want to change the world. And they're frankly horrified at how off track the world is, and that Vladimir Putin has decided to issue a general mobilization of his troops in Ukraine. And that really is the theme for this episode. All through Wednesday, Russia-dominated discussions. Thursday is going to be a heated Security Council debate about how to respond to Russia's aggression. Werner Hoyer is president of the European Investment Bank. That's the world's largest development bank. He got the bank out of Russia in 2014 when Russia invaded Crimea. He looked radical at the time. Now people applaud him for taking that step.
Our political leaders are suffering from huge pressures in the short run. They need to organize their countries and their economies in a way that they survive the next winter or maybe the winter after. And at the same time, the key decisions that we need to take require a longer breath. EIB is an institution that needs to finance in the long run. So we are a long-term financier. We collect money on the markets from people who trust that we invest into good, solid projects, economically viable and sustainable, as the Treaty on European Union says. And that requires the attitude of a marathon runner and not a sprinter. This collides sometimes with political necessities, which are understandably sometimes more short-termist.
Can you run us through a little bit what your thinking and planning is around how to reconstruct Ukraine when the war is finally over?
The reconstruction of Ukraine cannot wait until the war is over. The biggest parts of Ukraine are free, liberated, or have never been affected directly by the war. So the Ukrainian people are doing a great job, not only as fighters against this terrible aggression, but also by keeping the economy running. And this needs to be supported as well, not only the military side. This needs to be supported. And if, for instance, a mayor comes to me and says, well, when the Russians came close to our city or town, we decided to destroy the bridge across the river. Now the Russians are far gone. And he says, well, we need the bridge in order to keep our economy running here. This is why I believe the activities for the reconstruction of Ukraine must be at least beginning now and not at in some distant future.
And what does that depend on?
Well, EIB has always been good at being creative in tapping new sources and finding new financing schemes. One should see that EIB has been involved in Ukraine basically since independence of Ukraine. And then in 2014, we took the very tough decision to move out of Russia. The annexation of Crimea, that was too much. Others did not take that so seriously. We did. And since 2014, we are even more engaged in Ukraine and other parts of Eastern Europe. So when the war at the beginning of this year started, we acted immediately. First, we made sure that everything we could mobilize on the short run would be mobilized in order to support the functioning of hospitals or whatever needed to be repaired immediately. But then we said, okay, in the following months, we have made commitments for big projects in Ukraine, not only infrastructure, for the next 6, 7, 8 years. So we did that with the first big program, which was agreed by our board of 1.5 billion euros. And we try to do more. However, we must say also that, of course, for everything we need the support of our shareholders and the European Commission. And I must admit that our cooperation with this European Commission is excellent, in the case of Ukraine in particular good, but the coffers of the Commission are not endless either. So we need to be creative in the invention of new instruments, I believe. I don't want to interrupt our enormous activity in Ukraine now.
And is there any risk, and I'm being a pessimist here because this war and this crisis teaches you not to be too optimistic, Europe, well, the rest of Europe, really has to retool its whole energy system as well. Is there any competition for that financing where, you know, European Union member states say, we need this money now to get off our addiction to Russian gas, and then maybe that leaves less for Ukraine itself.
Absolutely. The political leaders in Europe are in a very, very, very difficult situation, and the expectations of their people are enormous. And we have to be aware that we are going to see a considerable recession. We are going to see the reduction of standard of living. And that, for a politician, is not easy to swallow and to explain to his or her people. So we need to see that competition clearly. That makes it even more necessary to come up with alternative ideas. EIB is a crowding in institution. So this is the biggest multilateral development bank. Balance sheet of roughly 600 billion euros. The member states have never paid in more in cash than 25 billion. So the rest of the money we need to produce a lending volume of between 70 and 100 billion euros per year comes from the capital markets. And this is the role of EIB, mobilizing capital market money, private money, for the purposes of the European Union.
Just a slightly different question. Just in terms of within the EU itself, at the moment we're meeting here and there's a lot of recessionary warnings and economic headwinds and a lot of concerns about the European economy. What do you think about the investment climate now going forward, like for governments? I mean, do you think they have the capacity for that? They should have the capacity for that? Or do you think it changes the game because of these difficulties that we're seeing economically?
This is a very, very tricky question and situation, because according to all experience, in times of problems, of emergencies or whatever, the first victim is investments. The most needed thing would be investments. So there must be activity to bridge that gap. EIB is one of the instruments in order to bridge that gap. So now, right now, we, and that means the member states of the European Union and the Union itself, need more investment, not less. So they're an institution that can mobilize capital market money for investment purposes is needed more than ever. By the way, together with other institutions, we cooperate very, very closely on this, not only with the European Commission, but also with the national promotional banks, with other multilateral banks. The challenge is so enormous that it would be totally ridiculous if we would deliver one another a competition.
And do you worry, for example, that the climate agenda and is going to be sidelined, that the investment case for, investments that help the climate, that motivation, that urgency is going now? I mean, now everyone's worried about energy and energy security. And what role can the EIB play in terms of that energy transition and climate?
That is one of my biggest concerns, because we see that this terrible war that Russia wages against Ukraine has revealed some of our weaknesses, worst weaknesses. And that means the climate transition, energetic transition, is more needed than ever. And in this very situation, there are many voices who say, well, let us wait a while, let us postpone it a while, now we have different priorities. I think, no, this is wrong. This will be the perpetuation of the mistakes of the past. We need to move energetically towards the energetic transition now.
And I have a question around what I feel is a tension between urgent needs in this economic situation, where you see, for example, even the new British government, which is notionally very free marketeer, proudly right-wing, has to go into a huge subsidy program just to keep families afloat during this situation. And it has echoes of a lot of the payments that had to come during the depth of the COVID crisis. And that's just hundreds of billions out the door. And then I link that back, and why I say it's attention, I link it back to the UN global goals and the recommendations that experts like the Gates Foundation say are needed to meet those goals. And in many ways, those are rounding errors compared to all these other hundreds of billions. So if we just took international agricultural research from 1 billion to 2 billion a year, if we did similar things with pandemic preparedness, we'd be so much closer to reaching these global goals. So I guess how closely can you get involved in financing meeting those global goals?
Well, when the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations were proclaimed, we were a center stage and we took it up and came also up with instruments in this case. For instance, our new energy lending policy, which I presented to the United Nations General Assembly in 2019, was one part of the exercise. And in this context, for instance, we then thought we should probably mobilize private funds in different ways. For instance, that was then the time when we said, okay, what we have achieved years ago with the issuance of green bonds is something that should be replicated for the pursuit of other SDGs as well. So since then, we came up with the idea of issuing education bonds, health bonds, and similar things. And the markets are there. The attitude of investors have changed considerably. I remember a Davos meeting 3 or 4 years ago when I was sitting in a seminar with President Ramaphosa and Chancellor Merkel and others, and it was about climate. And a couple of seats next to me was the head of a big Swiss commercial bank. They said, "What the heck are you doing here?" They said, "Well, my asset holders expect me to be here to shape their asset composition for the future." So I think we underestimate the potential that is in the private sector and with the financiers on the private markets.
Very good. President Hoyer, thank you so much for joining us on Global Insider.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure.
If there's one thing we've learned from the latest stage of Russia's war against Ukraine, it's that the Baltic countries knew what they were talking about. They warned us all about what Vladimir Putin was like, and for too long, most of the world ignored them. Now we're going to speak with one of the men who predicted exactly what was going on, and he's got some very clear messages about how to respond to Vladimir Putin's latest threats.
My name is Urmas Reinsalu. I'm now the Foreign Minister of Estonia. I think it is very important in the UNGA address also the context where Security Council has turned because of statutory reasons incapable to address in a proper manner this aggression war which goes on against free nation in the center of Europe. In the war, which by assessment, my personal assessment, by assessment of Estonian Parliament, is a genocide. I fully support all the investigations going on under the flagship of International Criminal Court, but under the competence of International Criminal Court doesn't fall crime of organizing the aggression war. And so it paradoxically means that ICC could only deal with the crimes committed on the ground. These have been already registered by the Ukrainian authorities, more than 30,000, but not with the crimes which were organized by, we have assessed genocidal intent. And therefore, I think the issue of international accountability is of the utmost concern I would like to raise during UNGA.
Is that a war crimes tribunal, a special tribunal we need to establish? And is that something we do now, even as the battle continues on the field?
Yes, it's very important. This could be a tool to arrange a separate tribunal on the responsibility of Russian-Ukrainian war, and the harshness of crimes, well, committed and still ongoing, and the Ukraine gives us a solid ground, and also I think responsibility to do that.
We talked about the Ukrainian battlefields, and they're not only on Ukrainian soil. They're also in cyberspace, and that's really the field where Estonia has taught the world the most lessons and gained the most fame for your efforts there. Is there anything you can share about how you're fighting that cyber war and what other support Ukraine might need from the US or other allies to win digitally?
For actually, for surprise, it has happened that I think all experts said that the modern warfare would be of another type and so on. But we have seen it very, very much still metal and iron based, physical destruction based warfare. We have cooperated in a long term also with Ukraine in that particular domain, and. We have now in recent times got systematic, we have got different waves of cyber attacks towards Estonia. And I think our recipe has been indeed a certain comprehensive approach that if the adversary is making a cyber attack, then for now we have managed. But the truth is that we have to admit that there is, well, although very bravely Ukrainians are making developments on the ground by military achievements, but we should not look Zaporozhye case or fertilizers case or grain transportation case separately from the overall domain of the context, which is aggression war, which takes place. Russia is trying to separate the issues and put it these as a normal diplomacy issues. They are not.
One thing that can be forgotten amidst all of those really short-term urgent matters to do with Russia and Ukraine is that the UN has long-term goals. Every government signed up to these sustainable development goals, and now the world overall is falling behind. We're not on track to meet them. How does Estonia relate to the goal, and what worries you most about the trajectory of the world when it comes to those efforts?
Well, of course, these all development goals and this comprehensive but I think the main case is indeed now of how to diminish the human sufferings in a very near future. And there also we have to look, of course, also the green transition, where we see now how Russia is now just burning tons of gas in Finnish border because of
Literally burning it rather than selling it or giving it to anybody.
So yeah. And this is happening when we are discussing about the green targets. But we have to put it to the context. So the green transition aims, the poverty diminishing aims, all these elements, they are linked to the context of war. And although this is not a world war, but we have to admit that this is war in the world and all parts of the globe are now involved. So it has so many elements of influence that the first aim, what actually the United Nations as organization was formed, is indeed to get a peace. And this is a context.
That's a very important note to end on. Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Brooke Hayes produced this episode and is senior editor of audio at Politico. Jenny Arment is executive producer of audio at Politico. And our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. I'm Ryan Heath, and we'll be back with more of the action from behind the scenes at UNGA tomorrow.